I like Spike, but first, some words from the pen of Harry Secombe. Spike Milligan, soldier, poet, man of letters. He has five of mine. He hasn't answered already. He came up the hard way. The lift was out of action. I first met him in North Africa during the last war. I was laundering my white flag in a wadi when... when I became aware of a man wearing a German helmet, an Italian tunic and British boots. I don't believe in taking chances, he said. And I knew at once that here was a man after my own heart. Our friendship ripened in the warm sun, and one day he confided to me that he'd decided to become a writer. Shyly, he showed me a piece of paper with the word, nevertheless. I'm going to write another word tomorrow, he said. By the time the war had finished, he'd written over 200,000 words. Now came the great task of putting them together. The result follows. Be careful with it now.
Lady Barnaby takes her ease, knitting overcoats for fleas. By this kindness, fleas are smitten. That's why she's very rarely bitten.
I'm not afraid of pussycats. They only eat up mice and rats. But a hippopotamus could eat the lot of us.
Hello, Mr. Python, curling round a tree. Bet you'd like to make yourself a dinner out of me. Can't you change your habits, crushing people's bones? I wouldn't like a dinner that emitted fearful groans.
A very rash young lady pig. They say she was a smasher. Suddenly ran under a van. Now she's a gammon rasher.
A baby sardine saw her first submarine. She was scared and watched through a peephole. Oh, come, 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 said the sardine's mum. It's only a tin full of people.
There was a young soldier called Ed, sir, who when wanted was always in bed, sir. One morning at one, they fired the gun, and Ed, sir, in bed, sir, was dead, sir.
In 1917, the British invented the military tank. Under conditions of great secrecy, an attack on the German lines was prepared at Cambrai. The day before the attack, however, to the amazement of all, the Germans attacked the British with tanks. Immediately, a member of the House of Commons demanded an inquiry into our security methods.
thank you. Now, Lord Spike, you are a general in the British Army.
Yes.
Your salary is £3,000 a year.
Yes.
You consider that a living wage?
Well, as a matter of fact...
You are living?
Yes.
Well, then you must be getting a living wage. All right. Now, Lord Spike, you knew of the promised British tank attack 3 days before it happened.
Yes, I had been told by the Minister of War.
You told no one else?
No.
Lord Spike, I have here before me a receipt addressed to you from the German Army. It says, for services rendered, 10,000 Deutschmarks. For what reason do you receive these payments from the German Army?
I happen to be a director. Have been for several years.
Oh. In fact, you have shares in the German Army.
Yes.
Oh. Lord Spike, is not your loyalty divided between the German and the British corps?
Of course not. I serve each office faithfully.
Now, you actually mean you are almost shitsoid in that respect.
Putting it clinically, yes.
Well, can you explain why 3 days prior to the British tank attack, a telegram was delivered to the German High Command reading, build tanks?
Coincidence?
And as a result of the successful German tank attack, did not the shares you hold in the German army increase in value?
Yes.
That is all, Lord Spike.
Pop it down for 3 5.
I'll have some.
I say, get my broker, will you?
Now, here's a description of a loser from a book of losers. Spike's only novel, Pakoon.
Barrington had been born into a class that denied him the joy of self-accomplishment. It had all been laid in for him. His name was down for Eton 3 years before his birth. Gilt-edged godparents. His baptism could be seen in the Tatler, London Illustrated, and in the Times, a small notice to that effect. Despite all this, he had been cashiered from the guards for a certain incident. It had been given 3-inch headlines in all Sunday papers, those Sunday papers that are always both shocked and distressed at crime and degradation. So shocked and distressed are they that every Sunday they re-shock themselves as a public duty. This must be stopped, says the front page. Then the copy.
Police raid den of vice. 16-year-old white girl found with black men. Working on information from one of our reporters, Scotland Yard vice squads this morning raided a Greek club in Soho.
Sergeant Henshaw, CID, reported seeing 120 couples playing bingo in the nude. When questioned, the proprietor, Nessis Philomenides, said that the players had felt hot.
Police removed certain appliances and an 8mm film projector along with some films. Names and addresses were taken, among them 18-year-old Lahon Maureen Campbell Torrington of Bayswater. She was escorted by Pandit Nawari Gupta, Hindu seaman of no fixed abode. He told a Paddington magistrate,
I had 2 whiskies and a small port wine, and everything went black. When I regained my sensibilities, I was in a black maria, handcuffed to 10 other men who were also naked.
He then showed them a photograph of Gandhi and claimed diplomatic immunity.
In the same way, poor Barrington had been exposed to the nation. His father, Lord Barrington, himself was a devout Catholic and a practicing homosexual. As he frequently said, practice makes perfect. He was a fine military figure, and why shouldn't he be? From his ankles to his groins, he wore Dr. Murray's anti-varicose elastic stockings. From groin to mid-rib, he wore several male corsets made secretly by Marie Lloyd's dresser. Around his shoulders, laced under his armpits and knotted at the back, were Clark's elastic posture braces. His glass eye gazed unseeing at the world. Into its live companion was screwed a monocle. A stickler for fitness, he spent every morning lying on the floor, clenching and unclenching his fists.
In the 1418 affair, he served as one of Haig's military asses, saluting, pointing at maps, walking behind VIPs, shaking hands, posing for photographs, and forever reminding the general his fly buttons were in full view of enemy snipers. And so won Haig's undying gratitude.
In the first of his war biographies, Spike describes the new major, Evan Jenkins.
His physique? He didn't have one. The nearest description, Tutankhamun with the bandages off. His neck measurement would be 11 inches, including shoulders. When a strong wind blew, he had to hold his head to stop it from snapping off. His Adam's apple stuck out like a third knee. And when he swallowed, it disappeared down the front of his shirt and made him look pregnant. His arms must have been sent from Auschwitz. They were for all the world like 2 pieces of string with knots tied where the elbows were. His legs were like one of Gandhi's split in two. His eyes were so close together that to look left or right, one of them appeared to cross the bridge of his nose. He had a pair of outsized ears which attracted flies. It got him the nickname Jumbo. But despite his comic appearance, he was a real nasty. He had us taking our bootlaces out and ironing them so they were nice and flat. He made us use toothpaste on our webbing to make it nice and white, while all our teeth went black. At night, he'd sit in his tent and play Whistling Rufus on a clarinet. And every morning, he could be heard gargling with TCP then spitting it back into the bottle, the mean slob.
I shared a tent with Battery Sergeant Major MacArthur, a regular but only 5'6½, which made him lack authority to anybody 5'7½. He had a face the shape of a pear held upside down, smoke blue eyes, and a straight fleshy nose under which hung a brown handlebar moustache. Head on, he looked like a motorbike. He had advanced piles and slept face downwards. That night he talked. I thought I was Walter Mitty, but this man was a congenital liar. He started.
I'm born of noble birth, you know. My forebears were Scottish barons. I have the royal blood. One of my forebears slept with Prince Charlie. From that the child was born. I am in direct line from that union.
Jolly good. I mean, what else can you say to a short, sallow Herbert lying face downwards under 3 grotty blankets, total value £3.10? He didn't stop there. There were the yachts.
Well, I have one tied up at the Pool of London.
Oh, yes, if I had one, I'd tie it up. Mm.
You see, I married a millionaireess, didn't I?
Why didn't she buy you out?
Oh, no. I couldn't let the whole country down, could I?
Why not? Everybody else has. He was still rambling on when I fell asleep. The next morning, the rain came down. Not only did it come down, it went up 6 feet and then came down a second time.
Yeah, boy, it's good for the crops.
I haven't got any.
I have. I've got 100 acres in Somerset and 300 in Canada.
But it's not raining there.
Well, no, and it's very, very worrying. Well, at this stage of the proceedings, it'd be a good idea, folks, to meet the man himself, ladies and gentlemen, Spike Milligan.
Here's a story that Roy might like himself. My Uncle Bertram was a great man. He told me so himself, and one can't argue with facts like that. Uncle Bertram was plagued with a bald head. It happened when he was 21. I was wounded in the head whilst fighting Turco-Arab forces in Mesopotamia, and my hair fell out, he told me. Latterly, I discovered that he went bald naturally, but that was too ordinary for a great man. Hope came to him when the family were living in Pune. Uncle Bertram was approached by a Mr. Pancheli Lalkakar, a Hindu holy man. For 10 rupees, he guaranteed to cure my uncle's bald head of baldness. The treatment involved my uncle sitting naked in a darkened room with a mixture of cow dung, saffron and treacle spread on his nut. "Stay in there 3 days, sir," said the holy man. It didn't work. My uncle hit the holy man with my brother's christening mug. My uncle took to wearing a toupee. One day my uncle said, Nephew, there are many wicked landlords in the world. Come, I must teach you to shoot. He thrust a Mauser rifle at me, and he put me in a bush overlooking a dried-up monsoon lake. He ran from boulder to boulder, and I fired blank cartridges at him, and he returned the fire with an old Arab pistol. Now, the crows and hawks of India are much angered by rifle fire, which is usually directed at them, and they took to diving on my uncle. As he disappeared behind a rock, a great hawk dove after him. It reappeared, touching something in its talons. Uncle appeared a few seconds later, revealing a clawed bald head and swearing above and beyond the call of normality. He threw rocks, sticks, clods of earth, one of his shoes, and discharged his pistol, but the hawk flew beyond the reach of the great man. That evening, wearing a knotted handkerchief around his heavily iodined head, he wrote a letter to England ordering a fresh wig and a powerful adhesive glue. For days after, he roamed the countryside with a pair of binoculars and a ladder. He searched every hawk's nest for 50 square miles, but alas, never again did he find that wig, and never again did we play at shooting. Years later, an Indian naturalist reported a strange find, a hawk's nest made from a wig. Stranger still, it wasn't my uncle's.
Oh,
Thank you very much indeed, Spike. Now, this is one of Spike's earliest pieces called The Dread Anti-Breakfast in Bed League.
Dear hotel traveller, this letter is to forewarn you all of a secret society of hotel employees, all pursuing an insidious course bent on casting a crepuscous gloom on humble partakers of early morning breakfast. Let me recount the horror I have suffered at the hands of those who run what is laughingly called the greatest hotel in the Midlands. Now, let me tell you what happened to me the night I closed with the night porter. He grudgingly entered my order for breakfast in bed on the sodden pages of a notebook.
6:40'd be all right for you, then.
Well, isn't that a bit early?
Not for me. I'll be up till then.
But tomorrow's Sunday. I'd like to have it about 8:30.
With lizard-heavy lids, he looked at me while he spat on his finger and erased the figures 6:30. He sucked the air in through his teeth.
All right, then. 8:30.
Could I have a Sunday paper as well?
We'll see.
I lapsed into sleeping consciousness, dreaming of that aromatic breakfast in bed. There came a strange hammering at the door and a strangulated voice which sounded as if the owner was wearing an ill-fitting truss. I looked at the watch. 5:40.
What is it?
It's your breakfast!
But it can't be. I ordered it for 8:30.
Nothing to do with me, mate. I was told 5:40.
There followed a further clattering, groaning and half-hearted doorknob rattling. Exasperated, I bid him enter.
I can't. I ain't got the key.
What about the pass key?
Oh, I don't know nothing about that, mate. I'm new here.
This was the war of nerves method of the anti-breakfast in bed league. Their task was to see that no matter what, you had to be got from your bed. Once they'd done that, their moral victory had been asserted. My task was to get from my bed, open the door, and get back into bed before he saw me. Otherwise, the breakfast tray would be thrust into my hand, and the spectre de la breakfast would be gone. In one tigerish bound, I opened the door and just managed to dive under the blankets as he rushed into the room, breathing heavily. He could see I had foiled his master move. For 3 minutes, he stood silently in the doorway, waiting for my nerve to crack.
Look, come in, shut the door, and put the breakfast down.
He pushed the door with his foot, leaving it open for passing morning maids to giggle at my ruffled dawn face. It was part of the plan. For several minutes, he wandered aimlessly round the room, bumping into furniture.
Oh, it's me eyes! Me eyes!
He moaned to frighten me. He stumbled several times. Finally, he put it down on a suitcase on the far side of the room.
Anything else before I go?
Yes, I'd like that breakfast tray by my bed.
He faltered clumsily. He made heavy weather of pulling the suitcase across the room. Then, cunningly, when almost within reaching distance, he played his trump card.
Oh! Oh! Me back's gone! Me back! Oh! Gone all over the front! I'll have to send another bloke up!
He ran, laughing, from the room. The smell of breakfast pervaded the room. The temptation was too great. Cautiously, I stepped from my bed, hastened across the room. There was a cough behind me. I turned. He had returned.
Oh. I see you got out of bed.
I'd lost. The league had chalked up another victim.
English teeth. English teeth. Shining in the sun. A part of British heritage. I, each and every one. English teeth, happy teeth, always having fun. Clamping down on bits of fish and sausages half done. English teeth, heroes' teeth. Hear them click and clack. Let's sing a song of praise to them. Three cheers for the brown, grey, and black.
At 12:30 a.m., I find myself in the cookhouse queue. Ahead of me is a stomach on legs called Gunner Kitchen. The nearer he got to the serving table, the more silent and tense he became. When there was only one man to go, Kitchell would go dead silent. Sweat would appear on his brow, and you could see him repeatedly swallowing the excess of saliva that was mounting in his mouth and nearly drowning him. Then it was his turn. The moment the last drop of gravy from the cook's spoon had finally fallen into his tin, Kitchell would start eating immediately as he walked to a spot to sit down. By the time he got there, he'd finished the main course and was into the duff. This gone, he would gallop to the back of the queue, hoping to get seconds. If he thought he was going to be recognized, he'd put his tin hat on and keep his head well down to hide his face. What gave him away was his dribbling, drooling, and shaking hand when he got near the grub. He earned his title, the Famine.
I reckon, said our cook, if he got to a field of wheat first, the locust wouldn't stand a chance.
Oh, those military meals. Breakfast could be recognized by the shape. Sausage, yes. But lunch? The white watery mound could be spuds, but what was the heap of steaming green and black? And that knoll of boiled grey stuff that shuddered if it saw you. Visits from orderly officers did little to help.
Any complaints?
Oh, yes, sir. It's this.
What's wrong with this?
Well, nothing wrong, sir, but what is it?
Head cook?
Yes, sir.
This man wants to know what this is.
That, sir, is a frat mystique a la Aldershot.
The cookhouse staff consisted of two ex-dustmen and the chef, Sergeant Paddy Harris, with multiple BO, black fingernails and halitosis. Medieval court poisoners couldn't have picked a more lethal trio. I could never help feeling they were paid by the Ministry of Bacteriological Warfare. Every evening, Harris could be seen leaving his billet, his service dress stuffed with tins of fruit, cream and other wartime goodies that he laid at the feet of his mistress. When he first met her, she was a little six-stone darling. When we left Bexhill 2 years later, she weighed 14 stone and owned a chain of grocery stores.
4 years she ate my dinners. 4 years she drank my wines. And all the while I was nourishing her for some other crummy swines.
If I gave her red roses, would she? If I gave her white roses in a bowl of wine, would she? I gave her green carnations made from dollar bills, and she did.
Every day while in detention, I had a visit from the orderly officer, a white consumptive lad who appeared to be training for death.
Not everything you want.
No, sir, I haven't got a Rolls Royce. I grinned to let him know it was a joke, that I was a cheery soul and not downhearted. That wasn't the way he saw it. He pointed to a photo of my girl by my bed.
That will have to go.
Yes, sir. Where would you like it to go? I think it'd go nice on the piano, don't you?
Put it out of sight.
But it's my fiancée, sir.
Photographs are not allowed.
What about statues, sir?
Sergeant, put this man under arrest.
He's already under arrest, sir.
Well, give him extra fatigues for being impertinent.
I planned revenge. I cut my fingernails. On his next visit, I placed them in a cigarette lid.
What are those?
Fingernails, sir.
Throw them away.
They're my fiancé, sir.
Throw them away.
Very good, sir. The next time he visited, I'd cut a small lock of my hair, tied a little bow on it, and placed it on my bed.
What's that?
A lock of hair, sir.
Throw it away!
It's my fiancé, sir. Etc., etc. The last one I planned was with an artificial limb. But the officer never visited me again. He was drafted overseas and killed during an air raid on Tobruk. A naffy tea urn fell on his head. And now to finish up with this, here's my very favourite piece from Adolf Hitler, My Part in His Downfall. And it's a description of a regimental boxing match.
In the red corner, from D Battery, 56, a 5, a 6R, Heavy Regiment Royal Artillery, Gunner Andrews.
We cheered as Lofty stood, but the sight of his skinny body, with shoulder blades protruding from his back like wings, didn't look very promising. In the opposite corner sat a red thing called Rifleman G. Motts. He was 5'6", covered in muscles, hair, scars, and tattoos of snakes disappearing into every orifice. Under Neolithic brows, two evil black eyes stared out from hair which grew on his forehead. There was no neck. The head seemingly joined to the shoulders by the lobes of his ears. At the first sight of this creature, Lofty tried to scramble out of the ring.
I'm not fighting that till I hear it talk.
Don't let up here in this corner.
They haven't.
Sentence out. First round.
The two grossly ill-matched contestants approached each other. The Bexhill air raid sirens went. Lofty, a nervous lad, immediately took cover lying face down on the canvas. The referee was puzzled.
You're all right, lad. Then you'll have to stand up, or I'll start counting you out.
Lofty looked to Conroy for professional advice. He got it.
Get up, you stupid nana.
He's rotten. He hit me when I wasn't looking.
Conroy threw in the towel and Lofty retired. But it wasn't the end. Lofty waited outside, and when Motts appeared, kicked him in the cobblers and then ran. I suppose you'd call it a draw. Well, there it is, folks. Performing this collection of the writings of Spike Milligan were Leslie Glazer, Marilyn Cutts, Graham Hamilton and Robert Bridges. You also heard himself, Spike Milligan. I Like Spike was an idea dreamed up by me, Roy Hudd, and produced by him, John Browell. See you soon.
Thank you.